With Governor Attia, this is tape 35, side 2. The second debate was in Eugene, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the third was in Medford?
Yeah.
How did those go?
They all went very well.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a great deal of recollection of Medford. I mean, Eugene. Medford, I do. I picked the site, which incidentally was the labor temple of the trade unions, and these were my friends down there. I found out afterward, Ted Gulongoski brought a bunch of his labor friends down from Portland. Terrible mistake. First of all, you know, you've got the upstate downstate thing, you know,
right.
And they noticed it, meaning the other, the local unions down there. And it made a terrible mistake. I also, and I think I did repeat that about, I know I did, when we were in that matter of two-parent family. That's where he accused me of abandoning the two-parent family. And I said, no, it wasn't me, it was you. That all happened down in Medford.
but there wasn't anything really significant that came out of the debates then. They were just...
I don't think so. We again hammered, of course, the plant closing thing, which is a lot major theme of the campaign. I do want to flash back a little. Remember, I told you I really wasn't nervous about these debates, and I genuinely wasn't. It wasn't a matter of going there with a great deal of trepidation. I really wasn't. You have an inclination to head that way. Dolores would say to me, "Well, are you be sure of this?" And I said, "Wait a minute! Don't get I'm relaxed now. Leave me alone." Some young lady, she said to me, "Neat young lady." Vic, he said, "Are you nervous?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I'm trying not to be." This was now the City Club debate. Well, she said, "Look at it this way: you got to have lunch somewhere." I said, "Well, I guess that's a good that's a good answer." But you know, by and large, for my cause and for what I had in mind, perfectly happy with the debates.
You had mentioned the plant closure element as being a major theme of the election of the campaign. Did you have your own theme aside from that? I mean, was there an official theme of your campaign or motto or a slant that something that in particular that you were driving on, or was it more your collective reputation and performance?
The basic principles underlying the campaign was which one of us could really manage government the best, which one of us could indeed help us improve the economy. Oregonians are very generous, and I say that with clear knowledge. Here we were with high unemployment. We had gone through this very high interest rate, very high inflation, and they were generous enough to say, "Hey, this is not something Vic had any control over," which, of course, I didn't have.
Were you concerned that they might?
Oh, obviously that's the case. You know, when somebody's hurt, they have to blame somebody. I mean, I'm not offended by that. I understand that. And they're going to blame maybe the closest one nearby. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but children probably can get more abusive with their parents than they would anybody else because their parents love them. Mm-hmm. You know? So, concerned to the extent that people were hurt, and I could understand that. But who could give them the hope, you know, because that's what we had to have.
Right.
We didn't have much else but hope. Who could do that and do it well? That's sort of a fundamental stability and all the rest of it. The matter of plant closure was a basic definition of the differences between us. And understanding really what makes business work and what doesn't make business work. And so that was used repeatedly and, of course, effectively, but repeatedly because, to me, it was a kind of a internal gut reaction. You know, others might view this as a good political tool to me, it was something that was internal. I knew this wasn't going to work. I knew this was not good for the economic growth of my state. I just knew that. Mm-hmm. So I could get enthusiastic about it.
Well, didn't the Democrats actually ask you to withdraw three radio commercials that they felt unfairly attacked Kulongoski for his stance?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, again, part of the deal. That's the it hangs on today that I said that Kulongoski was dangerous. That was the thing that they were picking on. And we didn't say that at all in our ads. As a matter of fact, the ads, incidentally, were only scheduled to run for and only ran for 1 week. And they were only scheduled for 1 week, that particular set of ads.
Wasn't there in one ad at least a woman that said, Kulongoski scares me?
Well, yeah, but there was a fine distinction that no one really remembers, but we do. We're talking about his programs, mm-hmm. not him personally. Kulongoski's programs are dangerous. But that's not the way it's reported. That's not the way it's remembered.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of people felt that there was a negative campaign going on.
Yeah. But, you know, I called, this was during during our senatorial campaign of last year, some of the presidential campaign, and some of the other campaigns that were going on. And I called Wayne Thompson of the Oregonian, and I said, don't you wish or yearn for the good old days of my dirty campaign? Because this is nothing. I mean, this is mine is just really nothing compared to what's been going on. We talked about dirty campaign. I never believed, nor do I today, that speaking about what is public record is dirty campaign. Mm-hmm. That's public record. Now, if I were to say some things that were speculation, that were not necessarily publicly known, that may be dirty campaigning, or something that I know to be wrong. That I would consider dirty campaign. So there's a definition, at least in my mind, what's dirty and what isn't dirty. Public record is not dirty. Reminding people of public record of not necessarily elected official, but an elected official who's a component, that to me is fair game, not dirty.
Mm-hmm. There were a couple interesting articles on in terms of campaign highlights that occurred. One was an intention on your part to blow up a Welcome to Oregon visit sign.
I have to tell you the whole story of that one.
Yeah, I thought that was a little odd. I'm sure there was something more to
it. Well, you know, I really had my fill. I just got really irritated. Here I'm trying to develop my state. I'm trying to get people interested in coming to Oregon. I'm trying to build the economic diversification of the state. And I keep hearing this, aren't you the guys that want us to come visit but don't stay? Now we're talking about a period now that it's at least 8 or 9, 10 years away. I don't recall, because it'd be 4 years of Straub and 4 years of me. I'm still hearing it. When I got over to Saudi Arabia, I heard it. And I'd had my fill of it. And it seems to me that the sign as you go out, as a matter of fact, I think it was a picture one time, there was snow and some people standing around, here was a sign, we hope you enjoyed your stay. It had too much of a ring, come visit, but don't stay. So we're in my cabinet meeting. Again, we don't call it cabinet. And we had the Department of Transportation, and I said, I guess what triggered it was this picture in the Medford paper that I saw. That really triggered me. I said, I want to go down there and blow up that damn sign. And they said, yeah, okay, Governor. I said, no, I want to put dynamite under that thing and blow it up. They said, you can't do that, Governor. Yes, I can. I want to blow that thing up. Well, of course, it's right by the highway. You don't want to use dynamite. But I really wanted to blow it up. What I was really trying to do was to make a rather dramatic gesture that somebody would pay attention to. What we did finally was to change the sign. Had got Tom McCall to go with me. It was his last really public appearance. Huh. Incidentally, he was hurting, but he really enjoyed it. He was back in his element again. you know, the people around him, and he was using all the fancy words, and it was good for him. And we went down there, and we changed the sign, and at least we got some notoriety out of it. And but it was a much warmer sign. I just had gotten my feel of, aren't you the ones that wants to come visit but don't stay, during open house, where are you folks from? They'd pause a little. Well, you know, we're from California. You know, embarrassed by the whole fact that they're from California. And you know, that's not what Oregon is all about. That's right. Not who we really are. Mm-hmm. And I just got tired of it. Mm-hmm. So this was my, he said, yeah, you know, they're kind of laughing. I said, no, I'm not kidding, guys. I want to blow it up.
There was also some comment about a couple other advertisements you were in. One was a, hey, baby, drink your milk ad.
Then
an NRA ad.
Yep. Incidentally, the hey, baby, drink your milk. This is how interesting how these things develop.
Didn't that come from Tony Savalas or somebody that started?
It was the milk industry.
It was the milk industry.
Yeah, and the one that got the biggest play was, what was that trailblazer? Very popular. Not a particularly good ball player, but neat guy. Hmm. Anyway, he was one of them. But I was, too. I can recall they did it in my office. They put one of these tracks on the floor, you know, and the camera would. I mean, it was really quite an operation. And we went through it. Hey, baby, drink your milk. Now, somebody's snooping around for some scandalous thing. And it was interesting. Well, Tia got paid for this commercial. And the media came like, do you get paid for this commercial? And my answer was, well, they offered to pay me. And I said, well, why don't you just have a ice cream party at Fairview? Pay for that. Which, incidentally, it did happen. And, oh, that just, it was like putting a pin in a balloon. He said that they had a real juicy deal here, you know. And it turns out they don't want to bring this one up at all. That incidentally, I'll remember because we were out there at Fairview. And a lot of these patients are really out of it. I mean, they genuinely are. They're mentally handicapped, and many of them are physically as well. And we had this ice cream party outside at Fairview. And they were there, and it was kind of quiet, and they were kind of eating their ice cream. And we had this combo of two guys. Oh, I should remember the name, because they're neat young men. And I asked them if they'd come out and play and sing. And they came out. And the minute they started singing and the music was playing, you could just see that all of these patients, they lit up just from that music. It was wonderful to watch it happen. You know, they heard the music, and you could just see it in everybody there. It was wonderful. But that was fascinating. Of course, I'm the NRA. That incidentally, I got absolutely no negative mail from Oregon. That doesn't mean I didn't get some, and it was very minimal from outside of Oregon. How can somebody like you, you know, do this? The ad, of course, was the way I feel. This was an ad by a campaign by the National Rifle Association that said, hey, all these people aren't crazies. You know, there's some pretty good people here. That was the intent of that particular ad. And they didn't put it necessarily in Sports Magazine. I think it was in, I don't know, Time Magazine. I know it was Reader's Digest and, you know, those kind of magazines, not, you know, hunting and fishing and
sports. So it got pretty big coverage.
Yeah, they put it in those kinds of magazines. Mm-hmm. It was a good campaign, I thought.
Irv Fletcher, who at the time was president of the AFL-CIO, had an interesting comment about the plant closure issue. He said, quote, "It admitted to me personally he thinks it's unconscionable for a company to close down a plant with only a few hours notice like Georgia-Pacific did in Coos Bay, but now he's trying to use the plant closure to club the hell out of Ted."
He's talking about two different things, but he is right. You know, there's a matter of public conscience, which I believe is a standard that business and anybody else ought to operate under. Mm-hmm. And in the sense that I felt of that instant closure and you're gone kind of thing. I do think companies know well in advance when they think they are in trouble and might close. And in terms of being really concerned about those who work for you, you should tell them, you know, that we've got a problem here, or forewarn them. I believe that. But I don't believe we ought to pass a law that says you got to warn them a year in advance. Mm-hmm. That's basically what this law was saying. In order to cover your tail so that you won't be in violation of the law, at the beginning of every year, you tell every employee, we're going to close. Now, you may not close for 120 years. Mm-hmm. But you don't know that ahead of time.
Right.
So you say, we might close. Well, you know, if you go through that charade, it's going to make, you know, your people that are working for you are going to be nervous, or they'll go find some other place to work. Mm-hmm. And it just isn't going to work. But what's even worse, we're talking about the companies that are here. Somebody's thinking about coming to Oregon. You know, they're got enough licenses and permits to go through and all the rest of it to get here. And a lot of things they have to sign up for tax. We don't have to sign up for that. We'll just go somewhere else. Oregon is 1% of the entire population of the United States. You know, we don't have to go there and sign up for that kind of thing. We'll just go somewhere else. Go to Washington, we'll go to Nevada, we'll go to Arizona, we'll go to New Mexico, we'll go to California, we'd have to go to Oregon. And that's the kind of thing, they just don't have to come in and buy into that sort of thing. That's what the Ted Kulongoski's of this world don't understand, it, or Fletcher's, they don't understand it. They don't understand it takes capital to create a job. It does take capital to create a job. Labor doesn't create it all by themselves, but I already covered my view on that, you know. Without capital, there's no labor, and without labor, there's no capital. I believe that. But Irv Fletcher's right. I was indignant about that, but that didn't say I'm going to call for the bill. Because, you see, that would be telling Ted Kulongoski's reaction. That is not my reaction.
Well, you know, going back to the whole thing on Kulongoski's is dangerous. Mm-hmm. David Broder of the Washington Post even got into the act. You've probably heard all this before, but
that's interesting to go through it again.
He said, quote, the new doctrine seems to be get the opponent's name known first and unfavorably. The message of the ATIA ads is that Kulongoski is dangerous to Oregon's health. The word is used over and over. Denny Miles, ATIA's campaign manager, explained that the ads made lavish use of Kulongoski's name because ATIA's polling found voters did not know much about the man. Rather than wait for Kulongoski to arrive with favorable information about himself, the governor filled the vacuum with his own version of Kulongoski's record. Mm-hmm. How would you respond to that?
Yeah.
It would seem like
we're telling the truth about Kulongoski. Uh-huh. And he's exactly right. Mm-hmm. In mm-hmm. other words, rather than have the perception of who Kulongoski might be, Kulongoski isn't going to tell who the real Kulongoski is. Well, what's wrong with me telling who the real Kulongoski is? I don't see the evil in that.
Right. Yeah.
I don't. Now, David Broder is a neat guy. I like him. Every once in a while, I bump into him. We have great conversations.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I like him. He's a great guy. But he's more inclined to go on the Democrat side than he is Republican. Hmm. He rarely says anything really nice about Republicans.
Well, I think the gist of the articles I recall now was that that there was something different about the campaign, that there was an element, not necessarily just you, but that there was an element of negative campaigning that hadn't been apparent before, and this is the reason why he was commenting on that.
Yeah, and I don't see that. Mm-hmm. There's different ways to campaign. I understand that. Again, just to remind the tape, this ad was designed just for, when I say 1 week, I'm not even sure it was on 7 days. I think it was on less than 7 days, but it was designed for a 7 day period of time, or 1 week period of time. Mm-hmm. That was it, from beginning to end. That was the whole thing. It did not come, it never appeared again. It wasn't because we were driven not to take time off the, it wasn't that at all. This is all part of our phased plan of what we wanted to say at certain periods of time. But yes, it is true. I knew that the people didn't know much about him. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with me telling people who he is. He is a labor lawyer. That's not a lie. That's who he is. It's not a lie. It's the truth. He did put in the plant closure bill, which had been terrible in terms of economic development for the state of Oregon. What made it even worse, though, and this is his fault, not mine, he first claimed he had nothing to do with it. And yet his name is the chief sponsor of the bill. In other words, he could have said, yeah, I did, and this is why I did it, and I believe, you know, that kind of thing. That would have been a positive response. But he didn't do that. So if that's observed to be negative, I have to live with it. I can't change that. But to me, it was public record. And public record, as I told you, is perfectly legitimate. There are some, obviously, who are tainted by the fact that they like the guy and they don't want to see anybody say anything that might be harmful to him. I can understand that.
Going on, there was a Western Governors Conference at Sal Shan Lodge.
Yeah.
So you were the host of the Western Governors right. Conference at this point. Foster Church, who you've mentioned before, referred to that occasion as, he said, Atiyah played the role of aggrieved litigant in the case of Oregon versus Ronald Reagan, and he played it to the hilt. This was the time that you were having some difficulty with some of Reagan's policies, isn't that true? And particularly over the deficit and things like that. Were you concerned that that there be some kind of backlash from the voters that would perceive you as being an extension of Ronald Reagan's ideology or philosophy or policy, and somehow this would affect the vote that you might get in the fall?
No, that's the way it's perceived. Mm-hmm. That's because it happened at a time during the course of an election. Mm-hmm. I could never say something I don't believe in. I just can't do that. It's just not in me to do it. First of all, I will acknowledge the perception. I will acknowledge understanding why it's perceived that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying to you, it's because I'm running for re-election. And then, obviously, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. But I'm doing what I'm doing because I'm aggrieved. For Oregonians, I really felt really very strongly about the plight that they were in.
Did you feel betrayed?
No. You mean by Reagan?
Mm-hmm.
No. Not betrayal in the sense that I'm saying to him, "Hey, that's not the way to do this." Mm-hmm. You know, after all, I'm someone that's been in public life. I'm someone that deals with budgets. You know, maybe not the size of what he's dealing with. I'm someone that deals with bureaucracy. I've gone through it all myself. I understand all of that whole thing. I've been in the legislature. I'm doing it out of my own observation of what's going on at the national level and how it's affecting Oregon. I'm not governor of Washington. I'm not governor of North Carolina. I'm not the governor of Maine. I'm the governor of Oregon. And so I'm concerned about Oregon, and I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure that Oregon survives. And so it comes, and this is at a period of time in which Reagan is dealing with the budget deficit, and how he's going to spend money. And I'm saying that's not the way to do this. You're hurting us, meaning Oregon. You're hurting us. This is not the way to accomplish this job. So my motivation, obviously, is different as someone perceives it. I understand how they perceive it. Matter of fact, you and I are talking now. I'm giving you all, you know, telling you what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm doing right now is I'm going to write history. Maybe somebody will look at it and say, well, that's what Vic thought, but this is the way it really was, in their view, and from their perspective. So you've given me at least a chance to get my side in on the deal. But I understand it. I know about it. You know, if this had happened the year before or the year after, probably wouldn't get nearly the attention as it did during the course of election year.
Well, you said that you wouldn't say anything that you didn't feel is true.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, you also have the choice of when to say what you feel is true.
Yeah, that's right. You're right about that.
During a campaign, you have to be very careful as to when you say what and how you phrase things and how you do things, don't you? Because everything reflects on your...
But I was never that cautious.
Uh-huh.
Go way back to our very early beginnings in 1958, standing on a street corner. Mm-hmm. And the question was, oh, gee, do you tell the people what you think they want to hear, then go do your own good things after you get elected? No, you go tell people who you are. Mm-hmm. Now, so this has never changed from that day to this day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Timing is not just my timing. By that I mean, it isn't, this is a campaign and I'm going to say it now. The timing also has to relate to the timing, in this case, of what Reagan's doing. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm trying to tell
right.
you? So I can't, if Reagan hadn't done anything, I obviously can't say anything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, even if I want to say something. Mm-hmm. So, you see, my timing has to relate to his timing.
Yeah.
Now, it's your observation is very interesting because, you see, others, whoever's going to write about Vicatia, I say use it from their own perspective. So when you read a history book, obviously you read your book and my book and somebody else's book and somebody else's book, and maybe between the four or five books you mm-hmm. kind of figure out who Vicatia is. Mm-hmm. You don't take your book or my book and say that's who he is. I mean, if you really want to study history. And so there are things that say that Vicatia did this and Vicatia did that because one of two things. I've observed other politicians doing this.